Okay, welcome back. Good morning. Today is dated Thursday, February 18 in Taiwan. Chinese New Year is closing up this week and back to quiet and boring, nicely boring here in my edge of eastern Taiwan. This is going to be episode 46, continuing the reading of Nityananda's speaking, which became called Chittakash Gita, translated by M.P. Pandit as Voice of the Self. We're on page 90. Today, what I'd like to do is read five pages, 90 through 94. Most of them are enormous, nearly full page or more than full page text blocks of speaking. And I'll read straight through 90 to 94 and then come back and do commentary on some of the different points that he's made. I'll try to restrain myself from interrupting. The text ends on page 103, and so this time today we'll look into 90 to 94, and next time perhaps break up the block of page 95 through 103, or read the whole thing, and then do commentary from the start of that. And after that, a few weeks from now, I'm not sure what I'll do, but I may do some long readings without much commentary, just to get the feeling of his mind through the speech without commentary interruption. And then we'll wrap this up. So today, as episode 46, we're close, probably in the last 10, certainly the last 10 presentations. And after this, we'll see what happens or what's best for next. But I don't understand everything he says, obviously, and I think that's okay that we don't, and the heart of his teaching ultimately is the fact that he has such attainment, and so a being of great attainment teaches or shares or reveals or radiates that attainment regardless of what they say or don't say. They reveal their attainment in silence and in speech. And even when we don't comprehend conceptually all the speech, I think there's great value in simply listening, paying attention to the speech of a great attained being. So, top of page 90, Voice of the Self, Chittakash Gita from Nityananda, translated M.P. Pandit. I'll just read the verses successively through to end of 94. Top of page 90, Nityananda said, "As gold is burnished by blowing upon it in fire, so is the inner to be made luminous by the exercise of subtle deliberation." Could be buddhi. "The world must be illumined in oneself. It is one means for the way of buddhi. Dharana," which also means concentration or collectedness or contemplation, even concentration, contemplation, focus, holding steady attention. "Dharana is understanding. It is near to the thought of the Atman, higher self. The experience is not from the word. The word comes from experience. The tree is within the seed, not the seed within the tree. Men are not in the world is within them. The world is in the hands of men. Speak in words what you think in your mind. Keep no deceit in the heart, no malice. Do not speak what is other than what you think. Speak only what you perceive in thought. Do not be deceitful with others. Do not hate. Among men, live apart or within, with mind one-pointed. If there is deceit in the mind, it is like the face of the sun and the moon during the rain. When the mind is pure, it is like the sun in the midsummer. At times, the star twinkling across the clouds looks shining. The nature of man changes within 5 minutes. Like a big star appearing fresh, the mind and inner being becomes pure. As the star falls, so the movements of the ego fall away into the Atman. The sky is not visible to physical eye. This is Akash. It can be seen only by the subtle eye. By thinking, know the thought, capital T. By sound, know the sound, capital S. By mind, know the mind, capital M. And that's probably by manas, know the citta. Next verse, bottom page 91, or bottom page 90. He who is in the jivatman, meaning the soul and higher self soul, is the paramatman, the greater atman. He who knows the gunas, or qualities, of the jiva is paramatman. The jiva becomes one with the paramatman. That is the realization of the nityatma, nityatma, eternal atman, nitya atma, eternal atman. When the mango fruit is on the top of the tree, it is attached to it. Similarly, when the jiva and the paramatman are one, they are not distinct. This is called yoga, when the sat, chit, and ananda are in union, and the three gunas are merged in the one. Next verse, page 91. Just a second. The kundalini shakti is to be brought out by the breath. By it revealed, liberation is to be attained. Faith, sraddha, is like the rope that is held. Hold tight the rope of vayu shakti, wind shakti, you know, pranic power. Tie up with the rope of faith. Shraddha, faith, is dharana, concentration. Keep the attention on dharana always. Join constant faith to this concentration. Faith shall fill each and every nerve of the being, which is nadi. To him who is thus, there is no separate entity as maya, illusion or falsehood. The mind itself is maya. It is the mind, and this is probably the word manas or manasik. It is the mind or the manasik that assumes the forms. All forms rose up in varied relations as cause and effect, the visible universe, the light of the universe, the light supreme. The moment one realizes that it is all maya, the fear of maya ceases. Remember in your mind your real form and meditate. To stabilize the mind in the practice of dhyana, which is meditation, and to be concentrated, or to stabilize the mind in the practice of dhyana, which is the root of the word chan or zen, by the way, and be concentrated in the consciousness pervading the head is moksha. The path leading to moksha is not far from oneself. Sin and merit are as close to each other as the eye and the ear. It is not beyond the buddhi. Pleasure and pain are one with buddhi. Reach mukti by the way of buddhi. Discriminative awareness. Holistic mind knowing. To steady that mind in oneself and be one-minded is moksha. In knowledge, or vidya, all is the self. There is no other vidya, or knowledge. Then there is none to speak, none to hear. It may be called the state of shunya, nothing. Hey, hey, sunyata. The pranavayu is like a rope. Whether in going or coming, it always moves in the same manner. It is not divisible. It has no distinction of time. When it is entangled in the physical nature, it shows difference. Due to various differing qualities, the jiva forgets his own station and lives in a different place. By the path of the buddhi, he should take his stand in the upward course. Tie up with the rope of faith, steady himself in the upward course and attain moksha, freedom from the varied sense objects. Then is peace, or shanti, attained. Reach that peace. They who move in the patent here and beyond attain to the status of Satchitananda, born eternally free. They have no cares regarding the results of their actions. Eternally free, they are always one-minded. They conquer the gunas of the jiva. Indeed, the mukti is far off till the sense of individuality is merged. Without this union, there is no distinction, no yoga, no mukti. Really speaking, there is no man without yoga. Each of the yogas has its own object. When a thing joins another thing, when it is realized that two jivas are really one, that is union, or oneness. This is realized in each case. The real yoga is that in which there is no delusion in any object. The yoga in which there is no desire for fruit is the path to moksha. Doubt does not leave till the jiva realizes oneness. Each takes it to be a madness when something is done which is not liked by him. When he likes it, he does not see it as madness. When it looks alike to both, nothing appears strange. I think when it looks alike to both, meaning what you like and what I don't like. When it looks alike to both, what you like and what you don't like, nothing appears strange. The mind is like cotton placed in the wind, but when it is full of devotion, it is like cotton well watered. Similar is the dissolution of the mind. Drenching the cotton of mind with the waters of jnana, realization, the citta, awareness, should be freed. Attain in the manner of the cotton. It is possible to meditate upon the Atman even while engaged in different activities. All the different objects are outside, not inside. Even while engaging oneself in various activities, the thought shall be distinct and separate. If the driver of a motor car takes off his hands from the steering wheel, the vehicle runs anywhere and there is danger. So should the mind be directed into the buddhi. Mind should not be allowed to wander anywhere. It should be fixed in the practice of the inner dhyana. The mind should be developed within by means of introspection. O mind, enlarge the subtle buddhi, fill the nerves and channels with it, and enter the Hridakash, heart sky. O mind, be always content. Be not deluded by the shadow. Next verse. 93. He whose mind is merged in samadhi is not deluded by the entire juggling. He has fear of nothing. To the Siddha Purusha, meaning the Siddha beingness, the great being of a true Siddha, there is no fear in the world. At the very sight of him, the tiger, the serpent, calm down. All creatures become calm. Even an unfriendly man becomes quiet for the time being. The moment they see a sadhu or a holy person, they stand still. For what reason? Because of the doubt, there is no darkness at that time. It is this sattva, happy guna, that appeals to them at the moment. Next verse. All do not become hungry alike. Similarly, all do not attain mukti at the same time. There is difference only in timing. They quarrel because of the difference in language. In the Hindustani language, sugar is called mita. In other languages, sakar, etc. But the use of sugar is the same for all. Whatever the varied uses it is put to, its place of destination is one. Next verse, bottom page 93. And this is the final concluding verse that goes all the way to the end of 94. Leaving aside the thousand gods, if you believe in one God, you realize what happiness is. There is contentment. Those who believe in thousands of gods are never content, however much they get. There is no happiness with two, but happiness there is if there be faith in one. To him who believes that God is one, not two, all appears as the self. All look like himself. That is the path to moksha. There is no enemy as such. All are friends. Do not let harm come by believing in two. Attain mukti by belief in one. Attain there whence you have come. No cause and effect. Play on the stage. Reach there whence you have come, and reach, attain, and reaching, attain moksha. Moksha does not come in search of us. We should seek for moksha and proceed by way of effort. To stand apart from the bonds of karma and the state internal is moksha, the path of liberation. Moksha is not attained by any other path. It is not different from oneself. You have not attempted to approach near moksha. That is why it looks far. Moksha is not to be attained by going here and going there. Search within yourself, merge in the mind, and arrive by the path of discrimination. This probably is merge in the buddhi, or merge in the chit, or citta, and arrive by the path of buddhi. God is infinite. Because of his doubts, man has created, under Maya, images of what is truly infinite. This doubt should be shaken off by means of discrimination, or buddhi, and jivan mukti attained. The love one has for an object is a kind of bhakti. In whatever one has had faith and got results, that he shall trust as great. This belief should not be slackened. There is not a thing without bhakti, meaning devotion. All creatures have bhakti. Like water is bhakti, differently a flow. All creatures have right for this all-pervading bhakti. It is there full in all. Bhakti shall be pure. It shall be attained by way of the heart sky, Hridayakash. Turning inward, the bhakti shall know the subtle. There is one desireless, careless. That is eternal liberation, attained through the path of Sushumna, meaning the central channel up the spine. So, all right, very solid teaching. I can see, he was talking to different devotees with their predilections and their specific training. Some were worshipping multiple gods, some were doing hatha yoga, some were doing pranayama yoga, some were in the world, some were not much in the world. So, top page 90, as gold is burnished by blowing upon it in fire, so is the inner to be made luminous by the exercise of buddhi. Subtle discrimination. Subtle discrimination, buddhi, you know, may be non-dual or non-conceptual, but it's the way of liberation in terms of mental functioning. It's ultimately supportive of samapadana in Buddhism. Samapadana, right effort or right exertion, which are a little distinct, but they're close enough. Don't pick up what's harmful. If you've already picked up what's harmful, drop it or lessen it. And do pick up what's helpful. And if you've already picked up what's helpful, continue it and cultivate it. So basically, avoid harm, and any harm already in play, in mind, in behavior, in process, try to lessen it and eliminate it. And likewise, pick up all that's good, if you haven't, and whatever good or beneficent, you know, to self and other you picked up or developed, keep going with it. That's it. So avoid the harmful, and any harmful already in play in one's life, in oneself, in one's mind, in one's process, try to reduce and then eliminate it. And pick up what's helpful and beneficent and meritorious and virtuous and balanced and in love wisdom. If you haven't picked it up, pick it up. And if you have picked it up, keep it going. That's it. To do that is of buddhi, I believe. And so the idea that the path to moksha is of faith and buddhi, I think relates to the idea that by faith, shraddha, we have some knowing, some clear knowing, recognition, deep mind recognition that there is a path, mind can change, liberation is possible, current conditions are sub-ideal, there's dukkha in the sukha, and there's work to do, but I can do it over time. And moksha is not necessarily far away. It's this one, it's here. The one that seeks is what is sought. What I seek is what I is. I seek this one, the true nature of what I is. Not what I am, what I is. What this I, or agency, or sense of self, or beingness is. What it really is, you know, is ultimately of its source. What is its source? Well, you know, all being comes from the one supreme being, or all awareness comes from unlimited awareness, or birth and death arise out of the deathless. Before there was light, there was a source of light, and that source of light is the source of I, and that's ultimate true nature. And so what we seek is what we is, and what I is the source of the sense of self I have today with its sukha-dukkha blend of well-being and suffering and dissatisfaction and all that. And so he says, so this sort of thinking or view, which I think is relatively accurate, although it's all relative, it's relatively accurate, is some degree of exercise of buddhi, even though the heart of buddhi is a sort of non-dual, non-conceptual knowing. But critical knowing is the knowing that supports continued development, right? The purpose of incarnation is evolution of mind, body, spirit. Deeply knowing or sensing, indeed, that's true, that this is a time of incarnation. The purpose of that is evolution of what I is, or the vehicles of what I is. The vehicles of true nature, mind, body, spirit, energy fields, which come out as tendencies in mind and, you know, thought, word, and deed. Purification of that, the development of that, the cultivation of that to its source, to its fullest potential, is the purpose, is the point. That's why I is here. And this is the way of buddhi. I don't think that it's against what he means by the way of buddhi. And he talks about dharana. Dharana is an interesting word. It actually means contemplation. It can mean concentration. It refers to, from yoga, wisdom library, Sanskrit word referring to your thoughts. It actually is one of the eight yogas of Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga, I've had some confusion. It's basically, ultimately came from Patanjali, great sada, sadhu, great Mahapurush himself, talking about stages or aspects of all paths. The Eightfold, what in Buddhism is the Eightfold Noble Path, is very comparable to what Patanjali called the eight stages of eight branches of yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga is not Hatha Yoga. Hatha Yoga is a type of yoga. Ashtanga Yoga from Patanjali is actually quite comparable to the Eightfold Noble Path of Gautama Buddhism, and includes, yama, niyama, what to avoid, what to do, and then various aspects of mind training and realization and attainment. One of those, towards the end, I think of five or six, is dharana, whether it's intellectual contemplation or contemplation which involves thinking about something, thinking about my mind or something, I'm not sure. It's considered the stage or element in the eight Ashtanga yogas before meditation, and it said the goal is to become aware of nothing but the object on which you're concentrating, so concentration, but it's also contemplation. So again, we have a lot of trouble with words here. It certainly is about contemplation, concentration, whether it's about thinking about as commonly implied by the word contemplation, I don't know. I use the word contemplation commonly for thinking focused thought on a matter, on a topic, like see it through, not seeing through, see it through by contemplating my personal process or phenomena or causality or true nature or whatever the point may be. But it's certainly... there certainly is needed concentration on an object to become one-pointed for meditation, but also to comprehend deeply. Another meaning of dharana is one of the eight means of Raja Yoga, and this is a whole other story. It's similar to the eight Ashtanga Yoga, but the Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali is all put under the heading of Raja Yoga. So, Patanjali teaching Ashtanga Yoga, which is not today's version of Ashtanga Yoga, being one guy's school of Hatha Yoga, this Patanjali's Ashtanga Yoga, by some, is classed as a whole as Raja Yoga. So it's all very complicated. So there's like Raja Yoga, which is kingly yoga, which is considered one of the ways, one of the spiritual paths or lineage technique ways of praxis, right? So there's karma yoga, which is seva yoga, which is service and action. There's raja yoga, which is really meditation. And then, of course, there are countless techniques. Karma yoga also could be ritual, obviously, and I'm not knowing everything about anything. Then there's Hatha Yoga, the asanas and body forms and breath. There's Pranayama Yoga, which is focused only on breath retention, breath control. There's Tantra Yoga, which is, male-female union or sexual energy circulation, but there are other meanings of Tantra Yoga, which are not sexual, absolutely. So there's all sorts of different yogas that are not in the Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali. And the Ashtanga Yoga eightfold designation of Patanjali is classed by some as itself as Raja Yoga, meditation. Okay, so when Nityananda says dharana is understanding, he's actually saying that there's a certain type of understanding from one-pointed concentration. It's basically, again, moving to non-duality. That's the point here. And moving from the many to the one. Moving from the impermanent to what is deathless, actually. Because what arises passes away. It's impermanent. And it is of the... It is of differentiation. The deathless is also the non-differentiated, or the non-specific, in a sense. He talks about equal-sightedness, equal-mindedness, one-mindedness. Knowing that the perception of many and the experience of many, just like the perception of objects that arise, persist, and pass away, the perception of impermanence, right, is illusory, is based on the Maya under which perception and conception occur. Anyway, you know, it's very limited how much you can explain the nature of the experience of non-duality with dualistic language. So he commonly talks about sequence and inside outside. Not only that, there's an experience of inside outside, but the inner is more central than the outer. The inner is the destination of the seeker. And so even if dharana is not about thinking, but concentration on an object preparatory to absorption or deeper meditation, that understanding is, even when non-conceptual, he's using the word understanding for a non-conceptual awareness of concentration, and says that's near the thought of Atman. But the thought of Atman is not the same as our thought. It's non-dual knowing rather than linear, dualistic thinking. It's non-sequential. Similar to what Robert Munro, the out-of-body journey fellow, talked about as a rote, R-O-T-E. It's basically a gestalt of comprehension, a gestalt of meaning. Ross saying concept complexes. In fact, when we say anything, like tree, okay, that's nice, tree. Well, that's actually more than a word. It's a word sound vibratory complex that pertains to a type of object, a class of objects called trees, that it themselves are profoundly complex. There's the outer, there's the inner, there's the processing, there's the type, there's the height, there's the energetics, there's the evolutionary history, you know. It's tree is an ideal, and it's highly complex, and we can explain, we can look into that complexity bit by bit, by thought, but there is a capacity to comprehend it fully in an integrated way, and that's absolutely similar, I'd say, to the thought of Atman, which is not a discrete thought, but a complex, a unified system, complex knowing of whatever is attended to, or whatever is sought to be known. So anyway, he says, likewise, tree is in the seed, the seed's not in the tree, men are not in the world's within them. Atman is not outside yourself, enlightenment is not outside yourself. What is sought is not far away. However, the perfection of seven chakras is a big deal that normally is not the Buddha in the palm of your hand in any way whatsoever, meaning so easy of attainment. Because we're talking about seven chakra perfection. I don't think it's a minor trivial matter in any way whatsoever. Yet, the awareness, contact with Tales of Infinity, non-dual awareness, is not anywhere outside to be sought. It's a transformation of awareness or common mind. It's the common mind, manas, going into the non-dual mind, buddhi, based in faith and devotion. Devotion to that goal. Devotion to self-perfection or attaining potential or full flowering of what I is. And it's not easy, but it's not complex. in the sense that it's straightforward and it's here. It's the fullest experience of here that we can have, I'd imagine. So then he's doing some teaching about don't be deceitful. And that means don't be complicated when you don't have to be, or don't be tangled. Don't tangle yourself up where you're speaking what's not true for you. Among men, live apart within, with mind one-pointed. So among men, when you're in the world, live apart in the sense of focused within, with mind one-pointed on what? That's the challenge, of course. In one meditation, one knows what to be one-pointed upon. Walking in daily life, how do you be one-pointed? What one-pointed how? Well, one way is to look at the four positions, similar to four foundations of mindfulness, but not quite. Sitting, standing, walking, lying down. When you're sitting, be focused in whatever is as much as possible. Keep dharana, concentration, upon what the major object of your activity may be while you're sitting. When you're standing, like brushing your teeth, it's very possible to get into a certain, like a qigong gesture, a posture, bent knees, there are certain yogic postures for standing meditation. There are yogic postures for Chinese qigong or Chinese yoga. It's good to know what they are. Likewise, when lying down, one can go right into those postures and follow the breath or go to sleep, whatever you want. But same thing with walking, it can also be a chance for walking meditation. So sitting, standing, walking, lying down. Sitting is more challenging. It depends on what you're involved in doing while you're sitting. Focused on that. Standing, you got to focus on whatever you're doing while you're standing, but you certainly, it's assisted by taking a yogic or a qigong type pose. Bent knees, legs, shoulder distance, spread somewhat, whatever. There are many postures. Walking, anytime one wants, one can do walking meditation. That's useful. And lying down, anytime one is not sleeping, one can be following one's breath in likewise a yogic position. Whether it's Chinese or Indian yoga, there are positions for meditation lying down, like there are for standing up. So, that's interesting. So one-pointedness is really important, and as much as possible, we really think excessively, commonly. We really think more than we need to. So, goes on, some very nice teaching here. Like a big star appearing fresh, the mind and inner being becomes pure. Very well translated by M.P. Pandit here. And I believe it's probably very, very close to the original that Nityananda was speaking. At times, the star twinkling across the clouds looks shining. The nature of man changes within 5 minutes. Like a big star appearing fresh, the mind and inner being becomes pure. So, the path is that. The mind and inner being becoming pure. Mind is basically going from the instability and monkey-mindedness and wrong views of monastic differentiating many focused, unstable monastic mind to one-pointed or at least settled and quiet, discerning, seeing more clearly, aware of the foreground and the background, aware of deeper meaning, buddhi mind, buddhic mind. That's associated with mind and inner being becoming pure. And then he writes or spoke, as the star falls, so the movements of the ego fall away into the Atman. That's lovely. Movements of the ego, or monastic mind, or third chakra blockage, or lower triad blockage. The movements of mind associated with monastic function, which is lower triad blockage. The horizontal view, a low ceiling, dualism only, materialist focus, many-mindedness, many objects, and full of preference, mind. As that declines, like a star falling, one falls, that falls away into the boundless, non-dual, Atman, Buddhi, Jnana, knowing. I mean, again, I'm not there, so what do I know? But one can see that in a microcosm in the practice of meditation, where from the moments of the minutes of sitting down, the mind is active or busy or unstable, the breath is shallow or rapid, and then it slows down and it deepens, and the breath leads the mind to become more quiet. And there's a holistic knowing, or some insights come naturally. And there's a relatively stable equanimity. So he also said, by the mind, know the mind. By the mind with a small m, know the mind with a big M. So by the limited, dualistic, individualistic, personal mind, know the universal, non-dual, unbound awareness mind, big mind. Then there's also the, again, more discussion of inner and outer. Who's in what? What's inside, what's outside? Said, he who is in Jivatman is the Paramatman. So he, it's a personification. You can say what also. The Logos is in the Atman. Paramatman is in Jivatman. Atman, you know, higher self is sub-sub-Logos. So inside the sub-sub-Logos Atman is the sub-Logos Solar. Inside the sub-Logos Solar is the Logos Galactic. Inside the Galactic Logos is the One Infinite Creator. So inside logoic principle is its source. So inside the one that seeks to know its own identity is the source of all light, or the source of all mind that may seek to know its own identity. The negatives, they exist only because of the grace of God. Evil exists only by the mercy of God. So don't forget it. Then Jiva becomes one with Paramatman, or the entity leaves the octave, becomes one with the guardians in the community. That's the realization of eternal Atman, Nityatman, Nityatma, like Nitya, 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 Nanda, endless bliss. There's Nitya Atman, or Nityatma, endless or eternal Atman. And so, like, the non-distinction. When Jiva and Paramatman, Jiva as individual soul, Jivatman as the, you can say, fusion of the individual soul, which is mind, body, spirit complex, you know. Jiva is a pretty good stand-in for what Ra calls mind, body, spirit complex. Jivatman is a pretty good stand-in for mind, body, spirit beingness complex, or mind, body, spirit beingness totality complex. Because Atman is not really... If you're at the level of Atman, you're fine with the totality complex and seventh density too. So, Jiva as mind-body-spirit complex, Jivatman as mind-body-spirit beingness, Atman, and totality complex too, a somewhat unified seven-dimensional beingness. Then, Paramatman is mind-body-spirit beingness, a totality complex merged into the Logos, which becomes an eighth density being, or goes to the ranks of the guardians. Looks to me like that. And that, again, is the union of Satchit Ananda, or the bliss of Satchit, the awareness, Chit, mind, you know, big mind, awareness, Chit, of Sat. Sat as truth or reality, which is the reality of the nature of light. The nature of light is the Logos, is ultimately intelligent infinity, or boundless will, love, and presence. So that's the nature of light, and that's the nature of I, and that's known fully when Jivatman and Paramatman are one. Then, 91... discussion more about the linkage between Kundalini Shakti up the spine and the agency of pranavayu or vayu shakti. Vayu shakti is pranavayu, seems to me. Prana is intelligent energy, is ultimately light, the basis of seven rays and vibration. It's prior to pre-vibrational, but it is a manifest. It's the true substance of seven rays. What then Ra said, the nature of all energy is light. Boom. And so energy equals seven rays, light equals intelligent energy, love, light, love, with a capital L, that's prana, as far as I can tell. Vayu is a physicalization, it's a manifestation in motion. It's a manifestation. It's prana, or intelligent energy, in motion, in activity, in a manifest condition. Likewise, light is the manifestation of the logos. Prior to its manifestation, is prior to light. So, you can say that the seven rays are the manifestation of light, as light is the manifestation of the logos, as the logos is a manifestation of one infinite creator, intelligent infinity. All that works, I think. So, there's then the link between the conditions of mind and the work of pranavayu or vayu shakti. Pranavayu, vayu shakti is the wind motion activity associated with intelligent energy or prana or shakti going from root to crown, which is the perfection of the seven rays and the perfection of consciousness and the full merger of manasik into buddhi and jivatman into paramatman at the end of the line. Gotcha? So hold tight the rope of vayu shakti is stay with the upward spiraling light. How? Tie it up with the rope of faith, shraddha, faith. Faith in what? Faith in you. Faith in yourself. Faith in the process. Trust the plan. Oh, ho, ho, ho. Which plan? God's plan. Not the hats. Not the white hat, black hat plan. Trust the plan with a capital P. God's plan. What is that? Well, that's upward spiraling light. That means, you know, trust universal evolution. And it's a very interesting thing. I mean, in Buddhism, after Sotapanna, or with Sotapanna, first level awakening, which is breaking just three fetters out of 10, which the fetter of any doubt in Buddha Dhamma Sangha, or the teacher and the teaching and the path and the community, in the value of those, and any attachment to rites and rituals or the belief that performance is attainment. Performance may help attainment, but it isn't attainment. And the fetter of mistaken beliefs in ego or substantiality of the views of self, meaning the sense that I'm an ego, baby, so they say. So any spiritual teacher who talks about ego probably doesn't know Sotapanna. And only maybe Sotapanna, I don't know, and some other clever people, would realize that there is no ego. There's never been an ego. There's a sense of self. There's lower triad blockage. Without the lower triad blockage, the sense of self goes from manasik to buddhi, or goes increasingly non-dual, or inner-outer, known as one, increasingly. So one of the three fetters broken at Sotapanna is the old belief that ideas about me have any value or have any substantiality, essential substantiality. View is just a view. It's just a heap, one of the heaps. It's fourth skanda, sankhara, samskara, a fashioning, a fermentation, a gurgling up, a bubbling up from the mind of a thought form, patched conception upon limited perception. A limited conception on a limited perception of a very limited aspect of a totality that's way beyond conception. Such are all views of self, including so-called ego. But after Satapana, after that breaking of those three fetters, the entity will have... Gautama said, the theory goes, that within seven lifetimes or less, seven reincarnations or less, that entity will be in Nirvana, Nibbana, will finish the octave in seven lifetimes or less. How? Because something has started that can't be stopped. There's a momentum. The juggernaut, Jagannat, is in play. Jagannat, the Lord of the Universe, is in play. What Lord? The Lord that rules Pranavayu and Vayu Shakti. The laws of the cosmos in association with upward spiraling light, in association with a certain breakthrough in the seven chakra energy system of a being, a certain attainment has been made at Satapana, in which the inevitable work of Pranavayu, Vayu, Shakti, energy from root to crown, will perfect the seven chakras in seven lifetimes or less without a doubt, without question, inevitably, inviolability. It can't be violated. It seems like that's an interesting matter to me, and it seems like this is the point is that if you keep faith that complete perfect enlightenment is possible, and you keep do your danda and try to make right effort and have some faith in yourself and potential and your true nature, and what you seek is what you are, and hold close to yama niyama, what you should do and not do, or shila, pancha shila, then the Lord of Jagannat, you know, the Jagannat's law, Jagannat, the Lord of the Universe, which is a juggernaut, like karmic law, is of a juggernaut nature. Juggernaut is an unstoppable force. It just is. You can't fight City Hall. Scummy humans. No, I don't mean that. What I mean is, you can't fight Jagannat, the Lord of the Universe, meaning the laws under which we exist here. Whether we like it or not, there is a law of karma, and there is mind-body-spirit complex and the seven chakra system, whose condition determines quality of life. Improving the condition of seven chakras improves the quality of life or mind, whether you like it or not. And the law is the law. Certain seeds lead to certain fruit, and damaged seeds lead to damaged fruit, and evil seeds lead to poison fruit, and so on and so on. And if you don't water the fruit, and if you don't have good soil, and if you don't keep the sun, it won't grow. That's the law. And that's of Jagannat, Lord of the Universe, or is of a juggernaut-type process. It's just going to happen, whether you like it or not. Likewise, human civilization at this end times now will go where it needs to go, will fall or rise or reform or morph just as it must, based on countless input way beyond our control. So anyway, it is interesting that he's making a link between the metaphysics of pranic flow, root to crown, associated with perfection of the seven rays and complete moksha liberation, and the importance of faith, and the importance of dharana to keep the faith. Faith in self, faith in God, faith in universe, faith in plan, faith in potential. Faith that mind can change, and improvement can be had. Absolutely. Every suffering we have is a karmic result. If you want more happiness, make more merit. More generosity, more virtue, more thoughtfulness, more meditation, more service, you know, more radiance. If you want good fruit, make good seed. Put in good seed. That's it. So anyway, faith shall fill each and every nerve of his being. This is, you know, very matter. So he says, join constant faith to the concentration, to dharana, a contemplation, whether it's in practice or a contemplation of what we feel is essential or important to contemplate. So some other interesting epistemological statements. To him who is thus, meaning keeps constant faith in a concentrated way, or concentrates on faith, or keeps faith, and has a certain faith devotion, devotion to the path, to the work, to transformation, and a faith that it will, by law, be as I've established it, you know? Put in the cause, you'll get the you'll get a certain result. Plant the papaya seed, you'll get a papaya tree. Boom, that's it. You got to take care of it. It's got to be a good seed, and you got to take care of it. But the juggernaut of universal law, or pranic law, or upward spiraling light, or karmic law, is as it is, and that's the stream one cannot fight. And keeping faith that one can make use of it and have faith in yourself is critical. But then, for him who is thus, there is no such separate entity as Maya. The mind itself is Maya. It's the mind that assumes the forms. And so, yeah, Maya is not something, not a property of the object. It's a limitation of the subject. And so, nama rupa. All the rupa is simply a nama of the one making names, naming activity, sankara, samskara, fourth skanda, just a heap, just a thing, just another bubbling, gurgling up, burping up of the manasic limited mind activity. So the mind itself is Maya. And I believe that Huang Po, dear Huang Po, said there is no mind. So and it's nice to see it somewhere. He said, shunya, oh ho. You know, there's a lot of crossover, common ground between what today we call Advaita Vedanta, which is in many ways just classical Dhyana teachings, Raja Yoga, Patanjali, very classical Vedic yogic teaching, became what's called today Advaita Vedanta. They have to call it Advaita, meaning non-dual, because over the centuries, lots of folks ended up worshipping thousands of gods, just like Nityananda said. Lots of Hindus are into, polytheism. The original way of the yogis 5,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, in the forests of India, they're not into worshipping the thousands of gods, I assure you. So they were doing what later Patanjali codified as Ashtanga Yoga, Raja Yoga, Advaita Vedanta, or the original Vedanta, which was Advaita, as far as I can tell. And so, but it was nice that Nityananda said, in knowledge, in vidya, right? There's avidya, 10th fetter, which is the basis of reincarnation and presence. Our presence in the octave is because of avidya, which is basically light, or the contraction of chit into manas, manasic function, or the division of chit into manas and buddhi. Infinite intelligence or cosmic mind or unbound, eternal, absolute, supreme awareness got divided down into manasic and buddhi functions. That's all associated with the original avidya. But vidya, on the other side of the octave, or the vidya that's the basis of the octave, he said, in vidya, in knowledge, in sat, really, all is the self, which is no self. And he said, there is no other knowledge or vidya. Then there is none to speak. Right? So all is the self, and that self is nothing. But nothing is not no thing. Self is no thing, not nothing. If that sounds weird. No, nothing here means no thing, is not an object, is not a subject. Self is neither subject nor object. Self is the one that can conceive a dualism called self, subject and object. The conception of subject and object, the sense of being a subject in a so-called, in what appears to be an environment of objects, that is, the self is the one that made that experience. And that self is not one of those objects, nor is it the subject. Because the subject is just another object, actually. Our sense of self is an objectification or contraction of the one that has awareness, of intelligent infinity itself. So intelligent infinity contracts to a sense of subjectivity and therefore subject-object dualism. Meanwhile, that subject exists in association to the object, or there's a sense of a subject as there's a sense of objects not that are not the subject. That's inner outer or dualism, and yet all is the one who made such experience of dualism. That one is the self with a capital S, or Paramatman. And that one self, or self with a capital S, which is not a personal self, that made the mind that can experience subject-object, is itself sunya. And he said, in knowledge, or, it's very lovely. So let me say a couple of, this is bottom page 91. Reach mukti by the way of buddhi, to steady that mind in oneself and be one-minded is moksha. Moksha is mukti, liberation. In vidya, all is the self. There is no other vidya. Then there is none to speak, none to hear. It may be called the state of sunya, no thing, or nothing. And so, beyond avidya, we have vidya, knowledge, knowing, gnosis, jnana. The jnani is the one who lives in jnana, which is not different than complete and perfect enlightenment, gnosis, realization, which is the bliss of satchit ananda, which is union of jivatman and paramatman. Okay. With that, one knows that all is I. There's no one, there's no other than the one infinite creator, or the one infinite. That is vidya, that all is the self. But, then there's no, all is the self means actually that even the differentiation of self falls away. It's to say there's a self presumes that there's something that couldn't be, that might not be a self. Ultimately, all is one, and all is I, and all is the self, which he said, or I is the one that made the light of intelligent energy that is the octaves, you know. I made heaven and earth, not I, Scott. The I of intelligent infinity made heaven and earth and man and the heavens and the galaxies and all that. That all is a manifestation of its source, which is the one source of us too, as beings, apparent beings in this totality. And so if all is the self, or the self is the source that made the all, and there's no other vidya than that. That's what vidya is. He said, then there's none to speak and none to hear. How? Because when there's one, there's one is a conception. It's a conception that depends on the polarity of one, two. To say that there's one is to say that there's not two. To say that there's two or many is to say that it's not one. If you say there are many sheep in the field, it's a statement that there's not one sheep in the field. Can there be many sheep in the field and one sheep in the field simultaneously? Only if that many is one. Okay, so metaphysically, we would say, yeah, the many sheep is one sheep. How? It doesn't look like that. Well, what you see, appearance is not all there is. So things are not as they appear, nor are they otherwise. The appearance of many is relatively, is real as physical perception shows reality, yeah. But then there's beyond physical perception or visual perception, there are energy fields. There's interpenetration. And then there's the source of those energy fields, which is one, which is the logos, the source of light. At that stage, you can say that there appears to be two, but it's simply a dance of the one. Is it countless strands in the tapestry or one tapestry? It's both. Well, what if you realize I am this one tapestry of many strands, and there's nothing else but that? Is there anyone there? meaning unity is boundless, or boundlessness is unified. That's why Ross said the nature of unity is infinity. And so when there's infinity, you can't differentiate a subject to speak. And so there's no one to speak and none to hear, and that's why he says it's sunya, it's state of sunya or nothing. But nothing doesn't mean void, it means non-objectified. There's no object, there's no thingness to it. Anyway, when you get there, you'll know. So, me too. How's the time? Well, that's the end of that. So, all right, I have to stop right there. Next time, I guess we'll start at the bottom of 91. This is a real specialist talk for abstruse metaphysics. But, you know, other people talk about this way. I mean, we're just talking, I hopefully am talking simply deeper and more, in more subtle ways, about the same topics that everybody in every ashram or every metaphysician or every Buddhist who's looking into these things is talking. We're talking about path, we're talking about goal, we're talking about agency, meaning the one who's apparently on a path seeking a goal. We're talking about duality and non-duality and knowledge and ignorance. That's what they're talking about too, right? But there are very few that want to use the mind. We have to push through the blockages in the mind to be able to use the mind well, you know? One has to be acrobatic. One has to train to be mentally acrobatic. Or at least to use the mind well, to flash that blue ray sweetly or carefully or capably. It's useful. It's useful, you know? A bright mind is a happy place. At least it's cheery. It's not gloomy and sullen. And a lot of people's distress would be mitigated or reduced more or less, maybe somewhat, maybe greatly, by learning to think clearly, by reading more and thinking more and speaking more and getting it out. Clear out the cobwebs. So, but there are not that many people who will listen to us at length. And there are not that many people who we might want to listen to at length as well. So it's a problem. In any case, friendship is golden. So I hope you have good friends. So next time, I guess we'll start at bottom 91 or page 92 and see where we're at. So I hope it was useful. I hope you're well. Take good care of yourselves, and good night.